ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ever since a beef Wellington was used for murder, I've been wondering, why does a mushroom have the ability to kill humans? Sure, no one wants to be eaten, but how will the message about your toxicity get out if all the witnesses are dead? And if fungi can do that, then what else can it do? Anne Jones here, investigating mushrooms. Search for What the Duck and look for mushrooms. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
Norman, back in the day when you were in medical school, which was a long, long time ago.
In the 19th century. Yeah, carry on. For antibiotics.
I'm just joking. Did you do anything on confronting your implicit biases when it came to things like weight?
No. Our course was known as being fairly political, so we did quite a lot of medical sociology and things, which was about understanding your own biases, but they tended to be about politics rather than weight.
So I'm not as old as you. I've said that diplomatically, I think. But in medical school, I did nothing to confront my own.
Just showing off.
No, but we did nothing to confront our implicit biases when it came to things like race, weight. And weight discrimination is still a significant issue within healthcare. It can really negatively impact patient outcomes. And having discussions about weight can be really tricky, confronting.
Yeah, it's one of those conversations you fear to have. And then the whole thing about, one thing we did learn about a little bit is your heuristics in medicine, where you make your mind up on a patient within seconds of seeing them, which can totally lead you down the garden path in terms of both prejudice and indeed the wrong diagnosis.
And that is why confronting implicit biases is so important. But we are talking about that on the Health Report today. How to have discussions about weight, how to do it well, what doesn't work so well, and why it's so important that patients feel safe and comfortable.
I'm Norman Swan in Wadjuk-Noongarland.
And I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
Also on the show, a procedure that uses magnetic fields to stimulate nerve cells in order to treat major depression. It's called TMS, or transcranial magnetic stimulation, and we'll get an update on the latest evidence in a minute or two.
Pancreatic cancer has a very poor survival rate, and it's thought that delayed diagnosis is a big part of the reason. There's a global consortium trying to change that. In the news, there's been a big U-turn in the medical world. Decades ago, and possibly back in your day, you were telling parents and caregivers.
No, in my day, we'll come back to my day in a minute, but carry on. I know where you're going with this.
Decades ago, health professionals, paediatricians, GPs like myself were telling parents and caregivers to delay the introduction of foods like peanut, protein, egg into the diet of children until around age 3, because it was thought that delaying introduction actually protected against food allergies.
And when you did, you said, do it very carefully, just tiny amounts and see how you go. Which, if you want to make somebody allergic to something, that's what you tell them.
That's what you do. Now, there was a trial published in 2015 which really changed the game. It showed that earlier introduction of these common allergy-causing foods like peanut protein actually reduced the risk of food allergy, and it led to guidelines internationally in Australia updating.
Yeah, and Australia was one of the world leaders in this area, trying to pioneer this earlier introduction. And part of the problem was, it was really interesting, this shift is that paediatricians and allergists in Australia knew that they should be changing the rules. But the World Health Organization, because they feared that introducing solids earlier would change breastfeeding habits in low-income countries, kept that regulation. But in fact, even the WHO was wrong, because introducing solids earlier does not affect breastfeeding. And that's been shown time and time again. So they were worried about nutrition. And we in Australia were worried that we might contradict the WHO guidelines. And meantime, we had a pandemic of peanut allergy because we were introducing them too late.
So guidelines did adapt. Research came to light. And what we started to tell parents and caregivers is get these common allergy-causing foods in earlier and keep them in the diet if there's no reaction. And there's been a study published in the journal Pediatrics, which has actually shown how successful these updated guidelines have been. And they've used electronic records. They've looked at the rates of diagnosis of new food allergies in children who were preceding the guideline update and after the guideline update. And guess what? It was very effective. actually adapting the guidelines, telling parents to introduce these foods earlier. It's estimated that around 60,000 children avoided the diagnosis of peanut allergy due to the shift in the guidelines, which is pretty phenomenal.
And just so we don't escape blame for this, it was doctors that did this.
He's looking directly at me. But do you know what, Norman? This is medicine and science evolving as it should. The U-turn happened because more evidence came to light. This is actually science.
But there was really, when you look in retrospectively, there was no good evidence for that late introduction. And everything told you that this part of the immune system that needed to be trained early. You know, but there were eminent experts internationally. I had them on the Health Report, mea culpa, and we was wrong. And this study, interestingly, they do say it's early days in this, but they did measure the antibodies, the allergy antibodies in these children as well. So they went down too. So it's going in the right direction, which is fantastic news. And one of our other favourite topics is the shingles vaccine.
That's right. The shingles vaccine reduces your risk of getting shingles, which can be quite a painful condition if you're
getting... Well, I hope it
would. Well, it's very effective at that. But people don't realise that you can actually get post-herpetic neuralgia as you get older, lots of chronic pain potentially from a shingles infection. But new research showing that the vaccines don't just protect you against shingles, but also reduce the risk of heart disease, heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah, we've in the past talked about the reduction in dementia, which seems quite significant. More than one study, a UK study based in Wales, but other studies elsewhere. So there seems to be a significant reduction in dementia. And now it's heart attacks and strokes. Does the paper explain why that might be the case?
Well, they say that further research is needed to find out if it's due to reducing the risk of the infection itself or if it's the vaccine. So I think just like dementia, you and I spoke about it earlier in the year, we're still wondering whether there's a component of the vaccine that has a role or if it's just reducing the risk of infection.
And just to explain here is that other vaccines seem to show similar effects. Therefore, there's a theory that, well, we are going to prevent the recurrence of the chickenpox virus in the brain and that reduces dementia and so on. But there is tantalising evidence that maybe it's vaccines in older life that do it themselves. And wouldn't it be ironic if the additives to vaccines that RFK Jr. is trying to have removed are the ones that prevent dementia and coronary heart disease?
That's right. I thought we were going to get away with a week without RFK. But can we also point out that it's both vaccines? So if you've had Zostavax, which was the live vaccine, and now there's Shingrix, the recombinant one, the benefit was seen with both.
And if you want to know about the criteria for getting these immunisations, if you don't want to pay for them, do you get them on the government subsidy? We'll have a link to the rules on our show notes.